Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Talk him out of his insanity? Yeah, good luck, buddy.
I mean, it's one of the happiest endings you can get in the Magic multiverse.
You can have one of these out and it can essentially take over the game.
Nothing but threats come out to the board and you feel like you need to wrath every turn.
It's Bloodbraid Elf's world. We're just living in it. Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host, I'm joined by my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay today.
Oh, sweet. Good deal. Well, it's a wet and rainy day out here in Fresno. How's it up in the Bay Area?
It's been pretty dry, actually. It's really weird. It was pouring this morning, and now it's dry and a little bit windy.
Lucky? Gosh.
Oh. Why don't you come on down? Oh, wait. I'm up from you.
You are. You know what else is up? Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com and order your products, singles or sealed. Masters 25 is out. You can pre-order your Dominaria product and use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways, not unlike the one that we are having next episode. Greg, we're going to be going over some details for that just a minute here. But first, we have a very interesting story to talk about. Who are we talking about today, Greg?
We are talking about the starting of the Order of the Carmelites.
Carmelites? Wait. Are you suggesting that we are going to be talking about the lore and story of the great Kamal?
Yeah, we are going to talk about the great lore and story of the great Kamal.
Well, let's head on over to Lore Corner.
So starting off, Kamal, if you don't know, he started off in Ataria and Dominaria as a plane, Partic Mountains, Aura Villages when he was born, where he was born. He was born in 4275 to 4306 AR, which is after the brothers were born. He is a human. When we first start talking and seeing him, he is a human barbarian. He is the brother of Jeska and the pupil of Balthor, the Stout. Leaving his mountain home, he goes to the Cabal City to earn himself wealth and fame through the pit fighting. He used barbarian close combat skills and red magic to get his prized possession, an enormous two-handed sword that was rumored to have been crafted from the staff of Urza.
Wow, that sounds like a pretty powerful weapon.
It sure does. I mean, we already get a bunch of name drops here. Jeska was a card, became Corona. Balthor becomes defiled by the Cabal and the Cabal themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, this guy is a true started from the bottom, you know, and fight his way up, because the pits are just kind of the you know, very bottom of the barrel. And if you earn yourself a name there, then, you know, that kind of says something.
Well, like Silvos or Jareth.
There you go. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and start off then with Kamal's Odyssey. So not unlike a lot of other characters we've covered, not a great deal is known about Kamal's childhood, save that his grandfather was the legendary Lavamancer Matok, and he kept a pet fire beast. And the creature burned off his hair, which never grew back, which is why Kamal shows up as a bald character on his cards.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Upon arriving at Cabal City, Kamal was initially sneered at by the wealthy locals because of his shabby appearance and barbarian origins. But through an impressive demonstration of his magical skills, he was able to gain sponsorship and entered the pits. He first saw the Mirari when he was shown the fighter's prizes and became obsessed with obtaining it. His talent soon became clear as he won a number of matches where he also befriended two other fighters, the centaur druid Setan and the Cabal dementia caster Chainer. Ooh.
Wait. Seton? You mean the one that steals lands? Or wait, no. He makes druids tough for mana, right?
There you go. And of course, Chainer, we know he has a very historied reputation within Dominaria.
Very.
Well, Kamal quickly became a crowd favorite and earned himself a small fortune through wagers. However, following an attack on Cabal City by a Krosan dragon, Kamal's life took a dramatic turn. He aided in the city's defense, killing the enormous lizard. However, his victory was bittersweet, as he first found himself buried beneath the creature's carcass. Then upon freeing himself, he found that his kill, and the rewards for it, had been accredited to the arrogant Aven warrior, Lieutenant Kurtar. Oh, that pesky Kurtar. As a final insult, Kurtar's choice of prize was the Mirari, whose powerful magic called to the barbarian and amplified his already intense resentment and jealousy. Kamal thus began his journey to claim the artifact for himself, so his prize was taken for him by someone who manipulated the outcome of the events. That's just terrible. I mean, if that doesn't light a fire in your stomach, I don't know what does. So, Kurtar, that jerk, returned to the Order's Citadel while using the Mirari's powers to take control of it, struggling with the Order's ideals of destroying dangerous magical devices, like the Mirari. Kamal hotly pursued him and infiltrated the fortress, but was unable to steal the Mirari before Kurtar used the device to cast a devastating spell that crystallized much of the fortress, including Captain Piana and Kurtar himself.
Wow.
Whilst Kamal barely escaped the spell with his life, the Mirari fell into the hands of its other pursuer, Ambassador Laquatus, who had become equally obsessed with the device, but had to give it to one of his minions. So Kamal has just been incessantly pursuing the Mirari, and one after another it is taken just from under his grasp. The Ambassador's minions took the artifact back to the Mare Empire. Kamal's pursuit, however, ended at the port town of Breaker Bay, the nearest he could get to the Empire. When he was there, he entered the local pit fights. Yet again, he's quite the pit fighter, as you can tell from his card. But was unimpressed by the competition. He did, however, befriend a trio of youths who had been impressed by his fighting skills and asked him to train them. Kamal did so and remained in Breaker Bay until Emperor Aboshan used the Mirari to cause a tidal wave that devastated the northern third of Otaria.
Darn those cephalids.
I know, right? Those cephalids and their pesky ways.
So, after this, the Mirari was taken back to the Cabal by Braids, who was sorting out artifacts for the Empire. Kamal then returns to the Cabal city to once again compete for the Orb. While there, he meets up with his old friend, Chainer, whose skills as Dementia Summoner had increased dramatically. The two formed a successful partnership that broke the record for the most consecutive wins. But they parted company when the Cabal Patriarch insisted they throw their next match.
What?
Of course, the Patriarch is very corrupt. Kamal refuses, as he wanted to win or lose games by his own skill rather than on the whims of match fixtures. However, Kamal and Chainer remained friends. And when Chainer asked Kamal to accompany him on his ritual Shakar, Kamal agreed without question. The ritual began well, as Kamal and Chainer tracked and caught new creatures for Chainer to summon in battle. However, the pair were ambushed by a druid and several wild animals, intent on stopping their poaching. Of course, Kamal and Chainer won the fight. But afterwards, Kamal felt a lot of guilt. The random slaughter of animals just to feed the pits was exactly what Kamal's other friend, Seton, had been trying to stop. Thankfully, Chainer felt that the ritual was now complete, so Kamal was not forced to abandon him in the forest. They once again returned to the Cabal city and found those under attack by the Order. Kurtar, such a pest. So, Chainer and Kamal enter the battle, and Kamal is badly injured by an Order Justicar. Kamal regains conscious and finds himself in a Cabal hospital with snake skin grafted over his wounds. Skin that Chainer had created from using the Mirari. Kamal was horrified as such a procedure went against his barbarian principles. In order to cleanse himself of the additions, Kamal burnt off his skin and left the hospital, pulling up in a cheap hostel to heal naturally. Wow. Ultimately,
yeah.
However, Kamal was forced to confront his friend when the curse of the Mirari drove Chainer into madness, causing him to summon a vast horde of dementia horrors. Kamal was unwilling to kill Chainer, however, and instead tried to talk him out of his insanity before it was too late.
Talk him out of his insanity? Yeah, good luck, buddy.
Tragically, Kamal was unsuccessful as the power of the Mirari overcame the dementia summoner and warped his body into a hideous mass of dementia beasts. As Chainer died, he gave the Mirari to Kamal, who then took the Mirari and attached it to the pommel of his sword with the intention of keeping the dangerous artifact in safe hands.
Jeez. I mean, as we've learned from other stories that we've told, the Mirari ends up becoming quite the powerful essence, you know, through turning into Memnarch and whatnot. But my gosh, this thing is...
But I think one of the definite things that's interesting about the Mirari is that from its inception, it has always been tainted by Phyrexian oil.
Right. And it is so sought after by so many different people, and none of whom really see its true corrupt intentions. Until obviously much later on in the timeline of the multiverse. But at the meantime,
right. It's
like, you know, the bee's knees. Everyone wants them some Mirari. So,
yeah, they do.
Yeah. So let us continue with Kamal and the Mirari here. Kamal returned to his old home in the Pardic Mountains, where he was reunited with Jessica and Balthor. Initially, he was content simply to return home covered in glory, but inevitably, the Mirari dominated his mind. Oh boy. He became increasingly aggressive and unpredictable, even for a barbarian, and attempted to take control of all the tribes under his dictatorship. Jessica and Balthor tried to reason with Kamal, but were forced to oppose him as the barbarians divided into factions and readied for war. I mean, talk about trying to talk someone out of their insanity. This Mirari seems to be so powerful that once you become corrupted by it, you really cannot see the light of day. Kamal's supporters and his opposition met in dramatic battle, which ended with Kamal victoriously impaling Jessica with his Mirari sword, leaving her barely alive, but with an incurable burning chest wound that gradually ate away at her. Shocked into rational thought by this, Kamal recognized the dark influence the Mirari was having upon him, finally, and resolved to dispose of it for good. Kamal felt a calling from the Krosan Forest and thus decided to travel there to hopefully both heal Jessica and get rid of the Mirari. He was accompanied by a concerned Balthor and also pursued by his old rival, Laquatus.
Oh no.
So, something finally takes Kamal's head and says, "Look, dude! You're messing up! This thing's messing with you! You gotta do this! This is what's right!" And Kamal's like,
yep.
Okay. So
moving on, after his rival Laquatus is pursuing him, we go to the redemption in Krosa. When Kamal and Balthor arrived at the edge of the Krosan Forest, they were attacked, of course, by Laquatus and a shaky alliance of Kabbalists, order troops, both of whom blamed Kamal for the destruction of their bases. Against such opposition, Balthor chose to sacrifice himself in order to let Kamal flee with Jessica. Kamal was not left alone, though, as another old friend appeared, the druid Seton, centaur druid to be exact, who guided Kamal into the heart of the forest where he left his sister in Seton's care, as he journeyed deeper into the forest to purge himself the Mirari's influence. There he met with the ancient Nantuko Thriss, who gave him an understanding of the druidic way of life, as well as showing him the devastation the Mirari had caused. Kamal spent much time contemplating what he had learned and gradually renounced his old ways. He gave up being a barbarian. So wishy-washy. His meditations were interrupted, of course, by Laquatus, who had come to finally claim the Mirari for himself. Their showdown was further complicated by the reappearance of Balthor, who had been zombified by Braids and sent to take revenge on the merfolk responsible for his death. Unfortunately for Balthor, Loquatus was able to take mental control over him and instead force the undead dwarf to battle his former pupil. Balthor begged Kamal to end his torment, and so Kamal was forced to strike down his old mentor. Filled with rage, Kamal then turns to Loquatus, the cause of much of the barbarian's misery, and struck him down with the Murari sword, leaving the blade embedded in the ground. With that act, Kamal forsook the Murari and his violent past, becoming devoted to a druidic life in tune with nature. He had hoped that the Murari would be out of harm's way in the forest, and that he would be able to use his newfound knowledge to heal his sister and redeem himself. He was very wrong. While he fought Loquatus, Jessica was kidnapped by Braids and taken to the Cabal Patriarch, who tried to kill her, but instead turned her into Phage, the Untouchable. What? When Kamal came to Efeto to take her back, he discovered to his horror what his sister had become. He agreed to fight her in a pit fight, hoping to find a way to bring her back to normal. But the fight was interrupted by Akroma, who came to avenge Nevaeh's death. The two siblings joined forces and managed to defeat her.
So,
afterwards...
Wait a minute. What? Akroma came and Kamal teamed up with Phage to defeat Akroma?
Yep.
Oh my god. Okay. All right, that's crazy. Go ahead.
That was black and green versus white.
Yeah, right? And who knew that Kamal's sister turned out to be Phage the Untouchable?
Oh, there's more.
Oh, man. All right, go ahead.
Afterwards, the Cabal in the Crotian Forest made an alliance to take on Ixidor, which Kamal led into battle. The symbol of her alliance was the Soul Reaper, an axe made from the Patriarch's old axe and the broken halves of Kamal's druid staff. In the battle, he was forced to fight his worst fear, which was his old Merari-possessed persona, which he managed to defeat.
He fights himself. Wow.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
During this fight, he became convinced that turning Phage back to Jessica would kill her, so he left her and went back to Krosa.
Now, do you think that has anything to do with the fact that if you were to play Phage any other way besides paying her mana cost from your hand, that you would lose the game?
I actually think that's just the Cabal and their way of how they turn her.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, after leaving Jessica, Kamal, aware of what he must do in the foreseeable future, returned to Krosa and planted himself in a deep meditation near Krosa's center point. Very non-barbaric. There, he stayed for a year until Stonebrow came to fetch him. At first, Kamal seemed dead, having gone for an entire year without drinking or eating. What?!
Wow.
Stonebrow, in his despair, forced Soul Reaper into Kamal's hands. Green energy flowed from Soul Reaper to Kamal, who revitalized, now mentally prepared for his task. He has been recharged. Kamal was finally prepared to kill Phage. Riding upon Stonebrow with a small army of elves, centaurs, and Nentuko, Kamal arrived at Sanctum. Entering the great city, they headed straight to the center of the battle, where Phage and Akroma were engaged in a fight to the death. Kamal approached them and swung the Soul Reaper. The axe claimed Phage's and Akroma's lives, as well as an unexpected third life, Zagorka's. The three women's souls and bodies flew upward in a vortex, then combined in an explosion. From the center of that explosion, a radiant being unlike any other was born, Karona, the false god. Flung out of Sanctum and into the desert sands by the explosion that birthed Karona, Kamal regained consciousness. Like most of Oteria, he felt a strong desire to find and grovel before Karona. Before he could chase her, however, Karona came to Kamal. Feeling unworthy, Kamal knelt in worship before Karona, who instead asked him to sit up straight, and then found out what the rest of Oteria intended to do. As the horde of Oterians seeking Karona charged closer, Corona flew up and fled. Kamal, like the rest, followed to where she descended. Corona decided to mete out justice, killing a couple of nearby people. She then ascended again and flew away. All the while, Kamal's perspective solidified from watching Corona kill those creatures. This new resolve allowed Kamal to unite with the reborn Numena and destroy Corona. Oof. I mean, talk about, he sees his sister, he sees these others that he's fighting with in the pit, they ascend into this great being, Corona, and Kamal is just a fighter. From pit fighting to killing these great beings, he is quite a powerful character within Dominaria's history.
He really is. He's one of my favorite characters because there's so much that happens with him.
As I've seen from your commander decks that you like to build.
Shh. So, after destroying Corona and freeing his sister, Kamal dies.
Ugh.
I mean, it's sad. He lived on as a hero renowned throughout Dominaria, remembered by both the common people and his sister Jessica. The Kamalite druids, including Zid, remained in Krosa as the world's magic and life faltered, and they were among those responsible for restoring the world to its former splendor following the resolution of the crisis. At some point in the future, a man named Baru once again take up Kamal's title of the Fist of Krosa. Much later, Jessica sacrifices herself to close the rift in Ataria's skies, allowing the great mending to begin. Immediately after, her dead brother Kamal welcomes his long-separated sister in a white void. With the two siblings finally reunited, she happily welcomed Oblivion.
Well, I guess that's kind of a happy ending to the story.
I mean, it's one of the happiest endings you can get in the Magic multiverse.
Right. I mean, with all the death and disappointment and, you know, just sadness, it's good to see some good characters reunited after death. So that's always good. So
it's more beneficial than, you know, being turned into, I don't know, a soul that had to deal with other stuff.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is true. All right, well,
Poor Balthor.
So why don't we let you guys know about Kamal and his iterations here. So first off, we have Kamal, Pit Fighter. For 4 red, he is a 6/1 legendary human barbarian with haste that says tap, Kamal Pit Fighter deals 3 damage to target creature or player. So that's pretty savage. I mean, he can lightning bolt pretty much anything. And you see his gigantic two-handed sword here in his art. But that's not necessarily the final iteration of Kamal that we see. What's the other kind of Kamal
so,
we have?
As you know, after that, he becomes the druid of Krosa, and he becomes Kamal, Fist of Krosa, which is a 4 generic green legendary creature human druid. He is a 4/3, and he has tap 1 green, target land becomes a 1/1 creature until end of turn. It's still a land. And then 2 generic green, so 5. Creatures you control get +3/+3 and gain trample until end of turn.
Ooh.
If any of you guys have seen my EDH deck, I have a Fist of Krosa mono green EDH deck that focuses around just beating you up. I mean, nothing but threats come out to the board and you feel like you need to wrath every turn.
I mean,
that's kind of the point.
If you have someone like Azuri, like an elf, you know, commander, then obviously you're going to be playing elves. And that, honestly, is more narrow than what Kamal can do. I mean, considering he can turn your lands into creatures and just overruns as his, you know, ability, he's definitely a very powerful green commander.
Very, very, very.
Yeah.
So, and then he's got a few other cards here, one of which we are getting here soon.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of why we talked about him. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean,
so
go ahead.
His associated cards, we have Kamal's Sledge out of Torment, which is 5 generic red sorcery. So that's a 7-drop sorcery to deal 4 damage to our creature, but it has threshold. So if there are 7 more cards in your graveyard, It deals 4 damage to that creature and then 4 damage to that creature's controller.
Wow. Ugh. Again, goes to show you the power creep we've experienced over the course of the years. Because, of course, you know, nowadays we have a card called Searing Blaze, which, I mean, this card costs 7 mana and Searing Blaze costs you 2. And if you've had a land enter the battlefield,
if you play a land.
Yeah, it deals 3 damage to the creature and the player. I mean, it is very interesting to see where we've come in terms of the history of Magic. True. And the power level. But yeah, we talked about Kamal's legendary sorcery, sort of the legendary Gen Wave out of Dominaria, our last episode. So yeah, we just wanted to bring to light this character and a little bit of his history so you can kind of understand how he fits into the whole storyline and the history of Dominaria. I mean, you've got, you know, the Mirari, you've got Corona, you've got Balfour, you've got a whole bunch of different... You got Phage, you know? I mean, this guy definitely has played a huge part in the history of Dominaria, so...
Well, but before we jump too far... There's a really cheap sorcery. It's a 4-drop. Kamal Summons. Have you read this card?
I have not. What does it do?
So it says each player may reveal any number of creature cards from his or her hand. So it works for everybody. Then each player puts a 2/2 green bear creature token into play for each card he or she revealed this way.
Hmm.
That's just cool.
If only we had some token doublers in green. Wait.
I mean, I don't know.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, there you have Kamal and his story. So, we're going to go ahead
what's that? You know, it's next week, right?
Oh, well, next week, we actually are going to be able to get the story for Dominaria. It's been on hiatus, a little brief wait for an extra week, what with the leaks and whatnot. There's been a lot of complications with Dominaria coming to the public, but, you know, we are going to be getting it soon enough, and we will be bringing to you the story of Dominaria starting next week. So,
well, that's exciting.
That's very exciting. But anyway, we have a couple... things to cover in our news and announcements segment, so let's head on over to As Foretold. Yeah, let's start off with those of you who have been following MTG Arena. There's been a certain thing that's been preventing streamers from streaming. Greg, do you want to kind of enlighten us on what's going on with this?
Well, for the few select that have been allowed to play in the arena beta, they had to sign an NDA saying that they were not allowed to show anybody but themselves the game. So that meant that they could not stream the game.
Couldn't stream, couldn't make YouTube videos, couldn't post on blogs, none of that stuff.
Nothing. So this week... we got new information that I'm excited about. The NDA is lifting, which means we're going to be able to get round-the-clock play on things like Twitch and YouTube and start really getting to see what Arena is all about starting on March 22nd.
Yay! Oh, my God. Honestly, I'm so excited. I cannot wait.
I know. I'm pretty excited myself. So, hey... all sorts of beneficial things to get out there and just play.
Yes. In fact, it was funny. I went on to Twitch one day and I was looking up Magic channels and I saw someone playing Arena. And I jumped on. I was like, oh my God, what's going on? And in the chat, sure enough, there was somebody there saying, hey, buddy, you know you can't stream this. And the guy was like, wait, what? I think he might have even been in a foreign country or something. But... yeah, it's very real. If you want to be a part of Wizards and their processes, you must adhere to these NDAs and other procedures. So he quit, you know, playing very, very abruptly. But he was actually, I don't know if he was unaware or what, but yeah, they're very serious about this stuff. So we will finally get to see Arena being streamed by people other than the Magic headquarters,
Wizards,
you know, who do their streams on Wednesdays, starting on the 22nd. So that's very, very exciting.
Woot! I'm excited for that.
Absolutely. So anyway, moving right along, there were a couple of tournaments that, well, one main specifically, the SCG Open in Dallas, which also spawned a modern classic as well as a standard classic. And then we also have the MTGO Competitive Standard League reports of this last week. And I got to say, I am very excited about Standard. There's quite the variation that is present right now. We're going to jump on over to the Brewmaster's Lair. Why don't we go ahead and actually start by talking about the main event, the SCG Open Modern in Dallas here, that was won by a red-green Ponza deck. Not only is this any red-green Ponza deck, but this deck takes advantage of one of the recent unbannings. It is running four Bloodbraid Elves.
Ooh, I like that card. That's a good card.
It is a pretty darn good card. I mean, Bloodbraid Elf can cascade into Blood Moon, can cascade into Stone Rain, can cascade into Molten Rain, can cascade into Utopia Sprawl, Lightning Bolt, a whole bunch of other wonderful cards that make this Ponza deck go. So while it is running these targeted land destruction spells, for those of you who might not be familiar with the Ponza deck, this deck in particular, you're running four Arbor Elves, so some good ramp there. Two Birds of Paradise, more ramp. Corsair Crucifix, just one. Three Inferno Titan as a finisher. Two Pia and Kira Nalar, which is just a great utility card. Four Tireless Tracker. This card has been so prevalent in Modern. It's just such a great value card at three mana, two and a green, for a 3/2 that whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you investigate, you create a clue that you can tap two and sacrifice it to draw a card. And whenever you sacrifice a clue, you put a +1/+1 counter on Tireless Tracker. I mean, this card by itself is so strong. You can have one of these out, and it can essentially take over the game. But yeah, no, this deck is serious. Ponza has been seeing a resurgence in the last 6 months or so, but I love the fact that it is actually running the four Bloodbraid Elves as well. That seems like it would just make this deck that much stronger.
It does. You're right.
Yeah.
It actually looks like there was a second one down around 20th place.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So not the only Ponza deck we've seen.
In the top 32, at least.
Right, right. And we do have repeats at second and third with Blue Red Gift Storm. That's been pretty straightforward as of late. I mean, there's not been too many new innovations with this deck. Gifts and Given, Baral, Goblin Electromancer. Not really seeing too much else going on here. So why don't we go ahead and move on? We then have in fourth place, Infect. Wow, I haven't actually seen an Infect deck placed pretty
That's
highly.
That's got a really interesting card in the sideboard.
In this,
like everything else is pretty much the same, but in the sideboard, it is running a one of Shaper's Sanctuary.
Oh.
Which, if you guys don't know what that card is, it is a one green enchantment that says whenever a creature you control is targeted by a spell, draw a card.
And it looks like in that sideboard, again, it's got those two Spellskites. I mean, Shaper Sanctuary and Spellskite seems like a pretty awesome combo when you're running a deck that really values its, you know, couple of creatures that it has to stick and keep on the board.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And then followed up by Infect, you got that Jund deck, which is running those Bloodbraid Elves, Liliana Last Hope, four Veils. Nothing other big there. Followed up by our first deck running Jace's Blue-White Control.
There he is. Finally. I mean, everyone thought that Jace was going to be this overpowered Planeswalker, but it turns out he's very just, you know, not normal, but he's powerful. He's powerful enough to not want everyone to just get him banned immediately again.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, in both of these decks, the Blue-White Control and then farther down the Jeskai Control deck, it's only running two.
Yeah. Not the four
of
that people might.
Bunch.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people would think that you'd need four Jace the Mind Sculptors to have a Jace deck. Well, this isn't necessarily a Jace deck. It's just an already powerful blue-white control deck that Jace seems to do wonderful things for. That's definitely very good. I mean, nothing too out of the ordinary here. You got one Gideon in the Trials, one Gideon Jura as your other Planeswalkers.
Oh, man. Do you see that Tribal Zoo deck?
Tribal Zoo?
It is essentially five color zoo plus Tribal Flames.
Tribal Flame, of course, being a one in a red sorcery that says Tribal Flames deals X damage to target creature or player, where X is the number of basic land types among lands you control. And I guess in a five color deck for two mana, that's pretty good value.
It is pretty good value, yeah.
Man.
So... That looks like it's quite a bit of fun. I mean, Narnum Renegade?
Yeah.
What?
And guess what? You're running those four Bloodbraid Elves. I mean, why not?
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I think in comparison between Jace and Bloodbraid, Bloodbraid has definitely taken the cake for most used, most recent unbanned card.
Yeah.
So... All right, well, just to round out the top eight, after that white-blue control deck, you've got Black-Green Tron and Eldrazi Tron, most of which are pretty familiar. We've seen a lot of those decks before. So let's just continue on in the modern respect to the modern classic here, in which it was won by a Dredge deck. Wow.
What?
So generally speaking... Yeah, generally speaking, these classics are made up of people who might not have placed too well in day one of the Open tournament, and so they have just kind of, they join up with the classic and try to do well for themselves. We didn't see a single Dredge deck in that top, 32 list?
32.
Yeah, and here it is winning. So, looks like maybe some of these decks forgot to pack their graveyard hate. But, of course, in second place here... You got a Jund deck. I mean, why not? Everyone plays Jund. You've got your
Red
blue...
Gift Storm.
Yep, just like you should. A four-color burn deck?
No, it's Naya Burn. Must be a land. No. Bloodstained Mire.
Oh, jeez. Okay, that doesn't count. Never mind. Okay. So, basically, Naya Burn. Blue-red...
Blue-red Prison.
Again, no Jace the Mind Sculptor, but...
This Mono-Green Tron deck looks like fun, though.
Yeah, Mono-Green Tron has been popping up a lot, too. You've got Jeskai Control rounding out the top eight, and guess what? No Jace. Wow.
Yeah, there's not very many. I think these decks, like you said, are the ones where they didn't do very well. So they probably didn't have the money to buy a Jace.
Yep. So just outside the top eight and ninth, you got a Black-Red Hollowin deck. Still kind of the new hotness that is popping up in good finishes all over the modern scene. And, oh my gosh, what deck is that? Grixis Death's Shadow? What's that? Is that even a deck?
I mean, there's some people playing it.
I guess. Man, talk about falling out of favor. Looks like with the introduction of Bloodbraid Elf and Jace, people got a lot better things to be doing than playing a Grixis Death's Shadow deck. It's not even running Jace. I mean, I guess why would you? It's a 4-drop, and Grixis Death's Shadow is all about running those cheap value spells. All right, well then why don't we jump ship from Modern and head over to Standard. We have the SCG Classic Standard, where the... Oh boy, look at this. Here we go. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 mono red aggro decks.
Yeah, red still kind of good. They didn't get rid of Bomat Courier, you ask me.
Yeah, Bomat Courier... you got Hazoret and Chandra still making up a huge part of that. Hello, Challenger decks. Here we come.
I know, right?
Right. But it was won by a Grixis Energy deck. And, again, Glintsleeve Siphoner just being an absolute all-star of the format. I've loved this card for so long. I think it's always just been super powerful. Definitely comparable to Dark Confidant, especially in Standard. It's looking pretty strong. But then you've got Mono Red, Mono Red, Mono Red, Blue Black Control, another Grixis Energy, and Mono Black Aggro. Okay.
I want to say that's at a semi-energy deck.
Yeah, I mean, ooh, yeah. You'd like this. You got three Bone Pickers in the main board. That's a pretty good card.
It's not horrible. That's a pretty good card. Rune Raiders, a pair of those. Vicious Conquistador, Night Market Lookout. There's some really good stuff here.
Yeah.
Battle of the Bridge in the sideboard.
Ooh, Battle of the Bridge is such a good card that I felt has flown under the radar for so long, but especially in, you know, a very heavy aggro meta, the ability to gain life, and it gives negative X, so you can take care of those Hazarets. Seems like a very, very strong card, a great include. Possibly even main deckable, I would say, in the right deck, but maybe we haven't found that right deck yet. And then we get all the way down outside of top 8 before we start seeing blue-red aggro, Naya Monsters, green-red aggro, and then there's a Mardu Vehicles deck way down in, I think that's like 12th place or something? I don't know.
Looks about right.
Yeah. But very, very interesting. Not too much diversity in the top 8. I mean, you definitely see the strength of Mono Red. But if we take a look here, in the standard Magic decks from MTGO, between in leagues from the 12th through the 18th, we see a wide array of decks that you have potential to build.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've got, obviously, Mono Red Aggro at the top, but then you've got Blue-Black Midrange, White-Blue Auras, White-Blue Approach, Blue-Green Merfolk, Teemer Energy, Grixis Control, Black-Red Energy, Blue-Green Pummeler, White-Blue Godfarrow's Gift, Mardu Vehicles, White-Blue, White-Black Tokens. There's so much variety out here, and I think that just since Mono Red Aggro has been so prevalent, people are kind of sticking to it.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of hype with these new sets, with Masters 25 and the Dominaria leaks that have kind of detracted from the attention people could spend to brewing new and powerful decks. But I think it's very obvious to a lot of people that there is still a lot of variety within the standard metagame. And any given day, you know, any deck could really take down a tournament. So
true. Yeah. True. And then it's like, hey, breakout, new deck.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to play it because, oh, that's cool. I didn't think about that.
Exactly.
So after that, take a move over to this Team Trios Constructed. We found this on MTG Top 8. Do you want to talk about Legacy first? Standard? Modern?
There's
so
many.
They played in everything. I mean, Standard is a pretty interesting one, if I remember correctly, because Grixis Energy is at the top. Dimir Midrange, not a black-blue control, a midrange deck. RDW, Blueback Control, Godfarrow's Gift, Golgari Constrictor, Grixis Energy, and then Blueback Control. This is pretty open, but there is definitely a color not represented here. That's really green.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's no green. There's barely any white. So, barely any green. I should say that. Golgari Constrictor is a green-black, but there's still not a lot of those colors.
Yes, that is true.
It's kind of interesting to just see this and how it all plays differently. But it's most of the same of what we've been seeing. Nothing too different.
Right. And, of course, when we go into the modern side of GP Madrid, you've got, oh, wow, here it is. Death Shadow in first place in that first place team. So it seems like it still has quite a high percentage over the metagame. So good reason to keep on playing Death Shadow.
How about that Valakut in second place?
Yeah, well, I mean, Valakut's just strong, and
it really is. You're right.
It is a great, great, powerful deck that did gain an advantage through Bloodbraid Elf seeing an unban. I mean, four of Bloodbraid Elf. Any deck that really runs red green, you can shove those four Bloodbraid Elves in there to get that value. So,
well, we see that it's doing well with three Jund decks here. So,
yep. Yep, in third.
Do you know what I don't see here?
What's that?
I don't see any white or blue.
No, not at all. I mean, just to round out this top eight, after that Valakut, third and fourth, Jund Jund, fifth Eldrazi Aggro, sixth Hollowon, seventh Jund, eighth Urzatron. That's four, is that four or three, three or four different modern events where we only have seen two copies of Jace the Mind Sculptor in the top eight. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if that's just, you know, time frame. Nobody's really had the chance to really dive into brewing with Jace, or maybe he's really just not that powerful in the modern format. So
I really don't know which one it is, but we do know that this card is kind
of
good.
Right. And I think Jace really functions well in much in more of a control shell, obviously. I mean, he draws you a lot of cards. Fate Sealing, once you get that control advantage with the control deck, is very powerful. And we don't really see too many control decks, you know, winning a lot of these modern events. I mean, Grixis yeah. Control is probably one of the more prevalent decks. And that white-blue control deck was really the only white-blue control deck we saw in any of these top eights. So, yeah, I mean, Jace may come into his own eventually, but as of right now, it's Bloodbraid Elf's world. We're just living in it.
Pretty much. Pretty much, yeah. Right. And then we make our way to the Legacy decks.
Yeah.
We start off with Eldrazi Aggro, which is just all too good. A four-color control deck running a 2-of of Jace and pretty much anything else you can think of that is normally in control. Dragon Stompy is your generic red deck wins. Bug Threshold, it's just the same. Dark Depths, though, taking in 6th place is kind of cool.
True. That's
actually kind of fun. Stoneblade and then Blue-Red Delver. No real big changes in Legacy. It's still an open format. It's still expensive to get into.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm really curious, why call it Bug Threshold?
Blue, black, green?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and I really don't see any benefits to... Oh, Threshold is if you have...
Seven or more cards in your graveyard.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
So cards like Tombstalker uses Delve. Deathrite Shaman, you get that value from loading up your graveyard. Okay.
Yep.
All
and Passiger to fill it up.
Tarmogoyf. Okay. I'm sorry. I confused Threshold with Hellbent.
Oh.
Shows you how much I know about that.
That's funny.
Yeah. So
I think with that kind of rounds us up for our brews and what we were talking about here.
Right. Now, one other thing I kind of wanted to touch on with the release of Masters 25. We have quite a few cards in this set that can be that you can use in combination with each other to make some pretty fun decks. I mean, we're going to branch from the competitive aspect here to just talk briefly about possible combos you can use here with some of these cards.
I've got my favorite already.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to kind of kick things off by saying a lot of people have been saying Flash Hulk, you know, using the card Flash and Protean Hulk in combination to go and grab 6 CMC worth of creatures to play. And there's a couple different combinations you can use to win the game off of that. My own personal history with this was as soon as I found out about this combo, I'm like, I have got to experiment with this. But I kind of went in a weird direction. I tried to figure out all the zero drop creatures that I could find, that being the three variants of kobolds from Legends. Of course, you've got your Ornithopters, you've got your Memnites, and just, you know, slapping all of those onto the battlefield. And then you grab yourself one, maybe two Signal Pests. And then you need a Haste Enabler, and then you can just swing in with all of them and pretty much win on turn two or even turn one if you're running like Lotus Petal and stuff like that. But if you have Urabrask and you fetch one Signal Pest, that's doable. You could also use, what card was that, Greg, that you suggested?
The Flamekin Zealot?
Flamekin Zealot.
Battle Driver.
That's right. That's only a 4-drop, so you could actually grab yourself 2 Signal Pests with that and swing in. But I definitely ran that deck pulled that off once or twice, you know, in just a super casual format, but it's really fun. And a lot of people who are opening this Masters 25, you know, feel free, you know, experiment, start deck building, do some fun things other than just look up the EV of your box or the total value. You know, there's a lot of good stuff in here. But Greg, you said you had a combo that you liked using as well.
I think this is possibly one of the strongest ways to play if you like blue and or green and or any color, honestly. So one of the things that I see a lot of cards that do is give creatures abilities to tap and do stuff.
Right.
And in this set, they've put in two cards that I think break this. One of those being Horseshoe Crab, which is a 1/3 for 3 that has pay 1 blue and untap. Not very useful when you're just having it out. But you pair that with something like Presence of Gond, which is tap, put out a 1/1 Elf Warrior, or Heavy Arvelus is really strong. And then the other card is Freed from Reality, which is an enchant creature.
Freed from the
allows
real?
You to feel, freed from the real. Thank you. Which is an enchant creature that allows you to pay 1 blue to either tap or untap enchanted creature. And both of these cards allow you to play so many different things. I was watching MTG Goldfish, and they were playing with that. He drafted it out of just kind of drafting it, but there's a lot of synergy. I mean, there's cards like Echoing Courage, which if you're doing the green-blue Presence of Gond, you get to have all creatures that share a name get +2/+2. So there's some really cool ways to play that are a lot more powerful than only going with rares like Flash Hulk.
Right, right. No, absolutely. And, you know, you're absolutely right. Freed from the Real really kind of opens up, a lot of different combos with cards that involve tapping. I mean, just for example, you've got Jaleera, Master Polymorphist, who says 2 and a blue, tap, sacrifice another creature, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a non-legendary creature card. Put that card in the battlefield, and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. I mean, if you slap Freed from the Real on her, and you can get multiple activations of her, and you have other cards like Ravenous Chupacabra or other cards that have certain enter the battlefield effects, you could have a lot of fun activating this polymorph effect multiple times. Also, if you got like an Elvish
Pipe. What
about
like Master of the Wild Hunt?
Master of the Wild Hunt too, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Elvish Piper as well, getting, you know, multiple activations of putting creatures from your hand on the battlefield. That seems pretty strong.
Oh my gosh.
Right? And then
you could stack Magus of the Wheel.
There you go. Yeah. 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 Also, going back to the whole Flash concept, we did get Unearth as a common in this set as well. So, you know, if you get that good enter the battlefield effect, feel free to flash it in. And then if it dies, like let's say Imperial Recruiter. Okay, sorry, it's a mythic, but still, you play Imperial Recruiter with Flash. You go get your card, put it in, you know, in your hand, and then Imperial Recruiter, Recruiter goes to the graveyard, then you unearth it, and you get an extra activation out of it. That seems pretty good.
That is pretty good. Niv-Mizzet the Fire Mind is really good with Freed from the Real.
Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely.
Anyhow, I think we need to wrap ourselves up and tell these fine folks about how they can win cards from that Forge and Stone deck.
Yes, absolutely. Well, for those of you who are interested in winning free Magic cards, the way you can enter our contest is you can send us an email at thewincondition podcast@gmail.com and let us know what your favorite or craziest win condition is in any format of any game of Magic you've ever played. and we would gladly review it. We will read it on our 50th episode cast, and we will ship you some prizes, these prizes being cards from the Forged in Stone Commander pre-constructed deck featuring Nahiri the Lithomancer, which is available. I mean, you can get the Nahiri the Lithomancer Planeswalker card. There is the oversized foil. Feel free to look up the deck list. And I think what we're going to do is have our enterers, our entries, submit a list of cards that they are interested in so that we can allocate as many cards to these people as we can. You know, we definitely want to give you guys what you want. So send us your stories. Send us your win conditions. We'd love to hear from you guys. Thank you so much for all the entries that we've had so far. And we've got plenty of cards to give away. So go ahead and send your win conditions to thewincondition podcast@gmail.com. And we will, you know, definitely do what we can to help you guys out.
We will. That's for sure.
Yep. Yep. So,
where can they find you?
Well, you can find me at MTG_Sean on Twitter.
And you can find me at NoobSlasher2003 on Twitter.
And of course, the podcast is at The Win Condition on Twitter. Check us out on Instagram at The Win Condition MTG. Check out our YouTube channel. I came into a box of Masters 25, and I will be putting a box opening video together along with card values and total box values, so that seemed pretty interesting. And you're just going to have to watch to find out what I pulled from that box. So anyway, all that being said, you can head on over to Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com and order yourself a single sealed product, and be sure to use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps and save yourself 10% off your purchase. And the proceeds will help go to fund future show giveaways, because we're all about giving back to our listeners. But anyway, All that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Always a pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all next week.